It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. This week on the Woven Energy Podcast.
What I'm trying to say is that I hope that you start to see the commonality between the AMSCAR techniques that we've been given you, not what's different, not putting your preconceptions about nature, your body, the energy within your body, your breathing, your heart rate, the rhythm of the drum, and how all those things interact with each other, setting and your physical movement, which is what we get onto in stage three, the spirit dance. Nature absolutely can teach you shamanism. There is no shaman in the world, no real shaman in the world that learns shamanism anywhere other than in nature's classroom. Here's a shaman's question, which sounds weird, you know, why can't it just be clouds? You know, we get taught as kids, ooh, make them into shapes so that you can classify them and have done kind of thing.
I've never thought about it like that.
Any kind of way, you know, flicking a light switch. Yeah, or climbing up a ladder, or walking upstairs. Stairs are great. Stairs are so good. Yeah, lots of different staircases. You know, when you breathe in, you want to try have the sense of keeping your breathing tube narrow for this one. This is Setlin Duhlan or Saikhan Setel, two different names, both Mongol. If you want to think a baseline description of the Nechtel, there is nothing harder in this world to describe on the baseline than the Nechtel. But it's something that I have thought about a lot. You take the techniques, the base techniques, the AMSCAR techniques, you habituate them, you get used to them, and nature then teaches you their flavor, the flavor of the activity, the flavor of the activity that AMSCAR.
Welcome to the Woven Energy Podcast on Shamanism. We are here with episode 22. My name's Joe, and I'm here with Damon Smith to talk about shamanism from the ground up. It's our mission here to bring you a complete resource on real, practical shamanism. Now, we are here with another practical episode, and usually I have an idea for a topic of the episode and I tell Damon and then he graces us with his knowledge. However, this week, Damon's had a great idea himself, which I'm really excited to get into because it's not anything we've discussed before, so new territory for me as well. Now, as you're most likely aware, we've done quite a few practical exercises so far on stage two of learning shamanism, the AMSCAR. So these are solid, dedicated techniques which require lots of discipline, but Damon thought it would be good to talk about how we can slip this stage into our everyday lives, how we can bring these techniques and maybe practice these techniques or practice the skills for stage two into our everyday lives. So I'm super excited about this. I hope you guys are. So Damon, take it away.
Sure. So far we've given a few techniques, AMSCAR level techniques, and those techniques are, I guess you could say, they're kind of surface level, they're kind of a way in, if you like. I know we've said already that AMSCAR is a way into the world of shamanism. Shamanism is, to a very large extent, a human being putting themselves in a state of being in which they can learn directly from nature in a very immediate and essential way. And in many shamanistic traditions, the easiest way or the first way that we start to teach that is through the human body. Obviously, it's the part of nature, I guess, with which we're most familiar. And it's kind of, you know, it's also the kind of part of nature that's always there and available for lessons, if you want to think about yourself as a student of nature, which hopefully if you've been listening to the Woven Energy Podcast for all these episodes so far, you've got the idea that if you're going to be a shaman, effectively that means that you're a pupil in nature's classroom. The purpose of shamanism certainly does not cease or end at the extremities of the human body. So last time, for instance, we did some work with a Shiki Kokyu, Japanese method. And, you know, we started at the end of our description, we started to do things like allow the movement of a branch of a tree to control our breathing. This is us coming this is just coming out of ourselves. So I think if you look at the Dalgech or Buchenhengreg or you know the techniques we're doing, even the Tillian technique, all of these techniques, if you've been practicing them or trying some of them, hopefully you've started to feel or get the idea of Amskar. We've described it as a lightweight observation of ourselves, a lightweight observation of the energy changes within our bodies and how the breathing and the heart and the movement of the blood in the body and the nervous system, if you want to think of it in scientific terms, and the brain, and even within the brain, the limbic system, how these things are all interrelated. They don't exist in isolation from each other. And that general sense of examining yourself as if you were as if you were yourself examining an animal in order to take on its spirit. Particularly if you think about examining an animal that you don't know much about. So you could think of perhaps some type of sea slug or, a rare bird or, some animal that you've never heard of before. Or never seen before, and you start to observe it, you don't feel that you know anything about the animal, so you just look, you know. And if you're in a state of chillicity, you just look and you absorb what it gives to you. You have no preconceptions about, because you don't think you know the animal. I mean, for instance, if you pick an animal like a tiger or an elephant, you know, from childhood with, you know, tears for tiger, ears for elephant, right? You feel that you know something about it, and you know, 9 times out of 10, you're probably wrong.
You've grown up on the jungle.
Yeah, exactly. So, not there's anything, I love that film, it has to be said. So, you know, I also recognize that, you know, if I want to learn about bears and tigers and snakes, it's the last place I want to be looking. So effectively, what I'm trying to say is that I hope that you start to see the commonality between the Amskar techniques that we've been given you. What's common there, not what's different. And you hopefully either have already or will through practice start to get a sense of this lightweight observation of self. And it's not, when I said that, you know, that you probably gathered already again what I mean by lightweight observation, it's not analysis, it's not baseline or TAM or cerebral cortex analysis of ourselves. It's much more
logical, rational.
It's much more paying attention to what's going on within the body in relation to what the body is doing. But not to the, this is what I mean by lightweight, but not to the extent that your thoughts or your intention or your attention are altering what is going on within the body. And that's quite difficult. It takes a lot of practice. You know, in some ways it's easier if you are indeed observing an animal that you don't know anything about, or you don't feel that you know anything about. I guess, you know, when Charles Darwin went around his voyage in the Beagle, or in his voyage around the world, you know, he came across stuff that he had no idea what it was. That, interestingly, you know, if you're interested in shamanism, there's a wonderful book, The Voyage of the Beagle by Charles Darwin. It's nowhere near as heavy as his famous book, The Origin of Species. and it's one of the best bits of travel writing I've ever come across, even if you're not interested in animals, you know. That kind of inquisitive, obviously it's to do with Toshal Teen. Toshal Teen is part of this. As we said, the Amskar is simply an extension of chillicity. So, you know, that Toshal Teen, not putting your preconceptions about nature, your body, the energy within your body, your breathing, your heart rate, the rhythm of the drum, and how all those things interact with each other, setting and your physical movement, which is what we get onto in stage 3, the spirit dance. How all of those things interact with each other. And what I hope you get is what I would describe as the flavor of Amskar. So it's like a flavor. It's like, just like, you know, we said, if you practice chillicity enough, you can switch it on. in a way, you get to a point, this is harder than just switching Chillisty on, because obviously Chillisty is the absolute foundation of this. If you can't just switch Chillisty on, then you can't just switch Amskar on. But the Amskar flavor, if you can get to the point where you can just switch that on and observe in a lightweight way the changes within your body as you do ordinary activities. Now, like, give you some examples of ordinary activities. Walking down the road, turning a corner, opening a door, particularly
driving a car.
Driving a car, indeed. In terms of opening a door, there are many, many different ways to do that. So remember the exercise with the stream, yeah? Find yourself a stream and find all the different ways to cross the stream. So they're opening a door. There are endless different ways of doing that. And that, you know, ways, your habituated ways of doing that. One of the things that I found through doing this is I don't open all doors the same way, even without thinking about it. You know, if I was just to do it the normal way, I would do it. If it's a heavy swing door that with a bit of weight to it, I will, actually the dynamics within my body that I would use, you know, in my, if you like, let's not use the word natural, but in my conditioned state, the dynamics within my body that I habitually used to open a heavy swing door are actually very, very different from the dynamics that I use for a light door. I'm not talking about deliberately. I mean, they just actually are. And, you know, if I wasn't practicing Amskar, I probably wouldn't know that, you know. I'm not just talking about using more effort to open a heavier door. I mean, physically different positions, physically different movements, different ways I deal with that. And so if you apply your Toshal T in there, you're observing what's happening with your breathing throughout the movement of opening a door. What's happening with your heart rate? What's happening with the energy that moves through your bodies as the blood flows around the body? What's happening with the intention? Hopefully you're doing this in a state of Chillisty, so you're not thinking about it too much. But again, you have to habituate these things. You have to practice them. The number of ways, when you move outside of that and you start experimenting Toshal T style with the number of different ways you can potentially open a door, different things you can do, different ways you can move through the door. You know, you could, for instance, you could, if the door's opening from left to right and you habitually grab the handle with your right hand and pull it open and go through, one of the things you can simply do with that as you go through is you can turn your left shoulder in more than it would normally and then step out with a kind of spin, step out with your right foot as you pass through. It's something you'd probably never even think of doing. But in doing so, you actually find, if you try that particular exercise, you actually find that if it's a heavy door, that's a really good way to open it. Really, really good way to open it. I mean, if the door pulls towards you, you know. And so what I'm saying is that you take the techniques, the base techniques, the Amskar techniques, you habituate them, you get used to them, and nature then teaches you their flavor, the flavor of the activity, the flavor of the activity that is Amskar, which is lightweight observation of the changes that go on with you in your body as you perform activities. And then you apply Toshal T, or you bring Toshal T's already there. You're already doing Chillisty. You know, just the very fact that you're doing this stuff means that you're doing Toshal T. But you start to bring Toshal T to the fore, you start experimenting with different things. Another really, really great one is to lie back in the grass, lie on your back in the grass, you know, looking at the clouds, you know. So you probably remember as a child doing this kind of thing, and you can see the patterns and shapes in the clouds. And then, of course, when we were children, we spoiled it by trying to see the shapes and turn them into people and animals and, you know, what else. Put things in little boxes, yeah. But, you know, doing that in a state of Chillisty, wow, you know, when the clouds are moving across the sky, you're on your back, you can't see anything but the clouds, you know, lying in the grass. Oh, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
I suppose that would be a perfect analogy for how we are so used to putting things in boxes, because it's widely taught that that is good for imagination. But perhaps when you lie on your back and you see all the cloud shapes and they form, that's perhaps not.
Yeah. So here's a shaman's question. Here's a shaman's question, which sounds weird. You know, why can't they just be clouds? Why do they have to be, you know, I don't know, dinosaurs and, you know, yeah. Why? Because clouds are wonderful. Clouds are amazing.
But we rationalize it into our preconceptions, don't we?
Exactly.
And it's probably the easiest way to do it, because anybody can do it and everybody does do it.
Yeah, it's actually quite a good example of us being brainwashed as kids, you know, these wonderful, amazing things that are so diverse, so full of change, so full of knowledge, so full of teaching for us, the clouds, that, you know, we get taught as kids, ooh, make them into shapes so you can classify them and have done kind of thing.
I've never thought about it like that. That's a really interesting way to think about it.
It's fairly sinister, actually, you know, what goes on. But a good example of the miasma, there's another one for the miasma podcast, but even just lying on your back, you know, just lying on your back on the floor, or even in your room. I don't mean even out in nature. I mean, it's great to do, you know, as with all these things, it's great to do this stuff out in the woods or up on a hill or, you know, whatever. But, you know, even just lying flat on your back in the room, just see what that does to your breathing. You know, that has an interesting impact on your breathing. And then as you're getting up from the floor, here we go, Amska, you know, there are so many different ways to get up from the floor. If you're lying on your back, to get yourself up into a standing position, there are so many different ways. And, you know, everybody will do it pretty much the same way. I know in the martial arts, some of us are taught how to stand up so that that's a bit a habitual way. You know, we're taught how to stand up so that an opponent doesn't take advantage of the fact that we're standing up. You know, we keep ourselves covered as we're standing up. Mm-hmm. And there are various methods for doing that. But actually, you know, if you take this in, we're not talking about Xingyi here. We're talking about life, nature. We're not in a combative sense, just how to stand up. There are so many ways to stand up, and there are some amazingly great ways to stand up. One of the things you can do with the torsional teen is continually experiment. Lie or flat on your back and continually move towards standing. Just start off. And if you find you're straining at all, if the movement that you're using is straining, then change it, you know. And when I say straining, there's various ways to strain. There's straining the breath, straining the circulatory system, the straining the muscles.
And I suppose the point is, in a state of chillicity, you become acutely aware of those.
You are acutely aware of those, absolutely. I mean, for instance, one of the things you can do just to try, and again, I'm not dictating. We've told you some AMSCAR techniques, if you like. You know, we've said shamanistic techniques are things that can be taught and somebody can learn them, but it's just like the start. It's just like the surface. So, for instance, I'm lying flat on my back. I start to stand up. I'm probably going to immediately put my palms down or something like that, or start to sit up or something like that. Hey, who says it has to start like that? The back of my right hand is on the ground. I move the back of my right hand along the ground and up past the top of my head. As it goes past the top of my head, it rolls over, so my palm is down on the grass. And then as it comes on the grass, just that movement, if I do it quickly enough, it will give me the momentum to start to roll over towards my left. And then if I do that quite naturally, the left shin, for instance, can fold in under my right knee. And you get this incredibly smooth wave-like way of bringing yourself to your feet without any straining at all. And you can just use the momentum to keep that roll going and come to your feet. It's not anything that anybody would be taught in a martial arts class, because it's not a very good way to protect yourself. It's not a good way to get up from the ground. But in terms of getting up, say you're injured and you need to get to your feet, you know, what a fantastic way to get up. But I only know about that because I've tried this so many different ways. Do you follow what I mean?
What's that author you mentioned a few episodes ago? Was it like Mosh Feldenkrais or something?
That's the guy, yeah.
Is this along that kind of those kind of lines, this awareness through movement? With the caveat of chillicity.
Okay, so yes and no. I think that, you know, what Feldenkrais wanted to do was he gathered, you know, I think you said in one of the podcasts that this sort of haze, or I can't remember exactly how you put it, but he says that a lot of people go around in a daze or a haze, or, you know, that they're not very immediately.
I think I said dursted. You know, like, you
know, dursted. That's the word I was looking for. The dursted. Yeah.
Your brain's just going.
And Feldenkrais recognized this, and so he wanted to use the movement to bring them the awareness. It's a bit like chicken and egg, you know. Actually, the way we're doing it, the way we're teaching it, the traditional shamanistic way, the awareness comes first. That's your chillicity. The awareness comes first. And we are using the movement to make change, to really just uncover. It's like digging up the root of something. We're really trying to uncover the roots of our breath, the roots of our, you know, what I mean by breath in a shamanistic sense, Amskar, I don't just mean like the breathing of the lungs. Our breath is the vitality that extends through our body and the way in which that's linked into the breathing. We're using it in a way, we're using the movement like a spade to dig that up. So it's a little different from Feldenkrais's approach, but it's the same. It's actually the same thing. It's just that he wanted to bring people awareness of what was going on. A lot of the awareness of what's going on in the shamanistic method is uncovered by Chalicity. What I would say is in his technique, these things, because considering that guy did this all off his own bat without any input from any shamans or anybody, he did an amazing job. What I would say is that, you know, the shamanistic way of thinking about this is probably a lot clearer. I think that, you know, if you think of Moshe Feldenkrais's developmental activity going on for hundreds and hundreds or even thousands of years, he might have ended up with something that was very like shamanism, but he had effectively one man's lifetime in which to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So
and that's the state of shamanism in society as well, because he wouldn't have known to even seek out shamanism as a source to complement his own work.
Well, unless he had opportunity, you know, as you've said on some of the early podcasts, you know, I was actually in the bookshop today. We're in the town, and I went in the bookshop and I looked at the spirituality section. I often look just to the outside hope. My goodness. You might laugh, me. I'm not sure that laughing was my first. Crying is more like. But, you know, I'm not saying there aren't some good books on shamanism. We've mentioned them before, you know, Terence McKenna's books, Marcelliade.
Most decent books on shamanism don't have the word shamanism in the title, though.
Absolutely. None of them do they? I think
if you told somebody to go and read The Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreutz to learn about shamanism, they'd probably have a laugh.
Yeah, actually, it's probably the best source there is in the English language. Yeah. Exactly. Carmen Blacker's book, I think, has shamanism in the subtitle. Eliade's book has shamanism is the title, yeah. Terence McKenna's Food of the Gods. No, there's no shamanism in the title.
Difference between learning about shamanism and learning shamanism. Learning about shamanism, there's certain good books, isn't there? Like
Eliade's book, Blacker's book.
Blacker's book.
The one that comes closest, Food of the Gods, it probably comes closest to addressing what shamanism. You know, the closest to talking about what shamans really do, of the ones that I've encountered. And I've encountered a lot, you know, I've been doing this a long time and there aren't many books I haven't looked at. So it comes the closest, but of course, you know, McKenna, he was a brilliant man. He was a great authority in his field, but he was not a shaman. Although he had leanings in that direction, he was certainly an animist. It's a great book, but again, you know, you can't learn shamanism from a book. You know, honestly speaking, you can't learn shamanism from a podcast. There's a great advert for the Woven Energy podcast. but what you can learn shamanism for is nature itself, you know? And so what I would hope, you know, with Woven Energy podcast is that we are just giving a few pointers for things that people might come across, you know?
Laying down signposts.
Exactly. It's like signposts. There was a book called Guideposts, translated from Japanese. They try to do this type of thing, not with shamanism, but with the Shinshukyo, which is the kind of modern Japanese shamanism. Modern Japanese esotericism. And very much that's a good name, Guidepost. It's a good name. So I think that Amskar, you know, what we're talking about, if you've been listening to these podcasts so far, this is a lot of listening you've done. I don't know what, we must be approaching 24 hours worth of listening. If you got this far, I think there's quite a lot of, Would that be right? Yeah, it must be about 25 as well.
Well, this is episode 22. We've also done quite a few shorter episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
As well.
So you've probably listened quite a lot. So hopefully by now you're starting to get the sense that me and Joe, we can't teach you shamanism. We want to, but we can't. What we can do is give you a few pointers that may help you, because the person or thing that can teach you shamanism is often difficult, and that is nature. Nature absolutely can teach you shamanism. There is no shaman in the world, no real shaman in the world, that learns shamanism anywhere other than in nature's classroom. But you know, nature doesn't just teach you, kind of without you doing anything. You have to make an effort to deliberately put yourself in situations where nature can teach you. And a great way to do that is get the flavor for Amskar, get the taste for it, so that in a way, you know, if you're into the Amskar exercises now, you're getting the feel. If you've been practicing hard, maybe you got the point, you can start to turn your chalicity on at will. You can, like a switch, you know? That's the greatest place to be. You just flick it on like a switch, because that's where you get to. Then, you know, that the sense of that, being able to switch your chalicity on like that, that kind of sense, have the same sense about Amskar. You can get to the point where you can flick it on like a switch. Then when you flick that on, especially if you bring your torsional teen, you allow your torsional teen to come to the fore and lead.
I'm just gonna put in episode 8, guys, for torsional teen, if you're a bit confused over what that means. Big episode on that.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. If you allow that to come to the fore and you switch it on, you get that flavor and you switch it on, you can now start doing Amskar pretty much anywhere. Getting on a bus, even waiting at the bus stop, walking along the road, buying a newspaper. Although if you're into shamanism, you know, if you're really getting into shamanism, you'll probably find, as I did, that you pretty much stop buying newspapers. that's not me telling you to stop buying newspapers. I'm just saying predicting that will happen as you get into shamanism.
Absolutely.
And so what we're talking about is any kind of way in what, you know, flicking a light switch. Yeah, or climbing up a ladder, or walking upstairs. Stairs are great. Stairs are so good. Yeah, lots of different staircases. You know,
I'm gonna clip that audio little bit out of you, Damon.
that's fine. Fun.
Stairs are great.
Trees and the ultimate. You know, you need to practice and you need to be safe and you need to make sure you don't hurt yourself. But the ultimate of this stuff is tree climbing. I've done so much of that in my life. There's absolutely no need to go lethally high in a tree to learn an awful lot. Again, just for crossing the stream, there are millions of different ways to climb a tree. Even up just the first few meters of a tree, there are loads of different ways to do it. Loads of different body movements, loads of different things you can do. It's something that we have innately within us that we don't think about a lot. We're good at climbing trees. We're really, really good at it, because it comes from the days when, you know, that was how we stayed alive. And allowing that, you know, the learning to climb a tree, which most people aren't that great at to start off with, it's kind of like, it's not really learning anything. It's like, it's emptying your cup. It's allowing your cup to be filled. It's already there inside you. And what you're doing is allowing it to come out. Through that learning process, as you're learning how to different ways of climbing trees, through that learning process, if you have the Amskar flavor switched on, again, you can see the effects that has on your breathing. You can feel the effects that has on your circulation, on your movement. And then you can start to allow torsional teen, that as the spirit takes you, to vary the things that you would do habitually when you're climbing a tree. At the moment, I'm making lots of hand movements with my hands, which would be completely meaningless if this was a video, unless you're into tree climbing. But this kind of thing is, but remember, this is all about learning. It's all about uncovering the energy changes within your body in response to the ways in which your body moves and the activities that your body carries out. As we've said many times, you are not observing yourself and writing notes in a notebook. This is experiential learning. If your body knows the movement and your body understands, your mind, your body and your spirit, if they understand what that does to the energy in your body and how that energy moves and how it relates to your breath, if they understand, if that is within you, that knowledge is within you, you do not have to cerebralize it. You do not have to logicalize it. It's there within you. Yeah.
And this do you know what this sounds like to me? It sounds like we're taking, it's like, because we've called them techniques in the past, that does give the impression that they are follow X, Y, Z to do a technique. This sounds like we're taking that a step further and going, this is how you create your own techniques and there are infinite of them. Is that...
Exactly. It's not even that. It's even more than that. It's like the techniques, again, as I think you said, it's like surface level. The techniques, I think you were talking about Tarshal Teen, you know, the activities are like surface level and there's a flavor to it. And the techniques are examples. That's probably the best way to put it. Some of them are quite rich examples. I mean, when we get into level 3 and we're talking about spirit dance, you see the mother of all rich examples. But they are examples, and they're examples of something. But it's not the example that we're interested in. It's that something. And that something, for want of a better word, in this case, is the amskar. It's the breath. But the breath in the big united sense, the breath as it affects and is affected by the mind and the body and the spirit, all acting together as one entity. And in the context of the environment and the changes that are going on in the environment, that's what it means by breath. That's what amskar means by breath.
Could we, if somebody isn't at the stage where they're perhaps on stage 2 yet and they're still learning stage 1, is it correct to say that this could literally be practicing, Tarshal Teen, practicing that the Tarshal Teen of Chalicity, that component of Chalicity?
I think that the stuff we gave for Tarshal Teen was good enough. I mean, this, you know, if you're finding lots of different ways to climb a tree, then, you know, that's probably practicing Tarshal Teen.
So what you're saying is you're bringing in, you're saying you're exercising Tarshal Teen, but with the...
In the particular exercise or technique that I'm talking about, I was assuming the Tarshal Teen is already there.
Yeah.
If you wanted to use tree climbing, for instance, as a Chalicity exercise, then just make sure that when you're finding these different ways of climbing the tree, just make sure that you're not working them out in advance. This is experimental, yeah? So if I was doing this as a Chalicity exercise, I'd be moving around the tree. I might even do it with my eyes closed. I'd be moving around the tree using touch, just feeling what I felt as my hands and arms and legs moved over the tree. I wouldn't be trying, sitting at the bottom of the tree saying, I wonder which route I shall take up that tree. That's how I would do it if I was doing this as a Tarshal Teen exercise. But again, if you can't do that already, then you shouldn't be practicing amskar techniques. You should be back on, do you follow what I mean? You should be back on Chalicity exercise. But yeah, but sure, you could use tree climbing as a way of practicing Tarshal Teen. Actually, a great way of practicing Tarshal Teen. But then in that case, you wouldn't be worrying too much about the breathing and what the energy changes that are going on in the body, because obviously you're trying to develop the Tarshal Teen so that later you can use that Tarshal Teen in order to uncover those energy changes. You know, so this is how it kind of builds.
Yeah, to take that in a direction of stage 2, learning about the breath, learning about our body. Yeah, okay, yeah. I get it.
That was it pretty much. I mean, there's other things you can do. One of the things you can do is when you say you're sitting on the ground, but you know we're talking about trees and lying on the ground, so. So say you're lying on the ground near a tree, which is something I quite like doing, you know. We've talked about why trees are important in shamanism, in human shamanism. We have our tree of life, which is effectively describes the shamanic view of the universe. In a way, it's the universe's view of the universe, because it was the universe that taught that to shamans rather than the other way around. You know, find a tree that's strong enough to take your weight, but it's not so big that you can't reach around the back of it. So if you're sitting or lying on the ground near the tree, you can put one leg either side of the stump of the tree, and then you can sort of come up, or you can kneel in front of it, or you can sit in the Japanese seiza position, you know, sitting back on your heels. And then what you do is you do like a clearing. Do you remember when we said using the drum for clearing the breath? Well, you can do like a clearing, which is like two sharp out breaths, like, you know, like that, something of that, like that, just to clear, just start. And then reach around the tree or move your palms along the surface of the tree. That's much nicer. I mean, you can just reach around the back, but it's much nicer if you feel, you know, that you feel the texture of the bark, you feel all the sensory information, because the trees are all different. They all feel different. They all feel great. They all feel different. Reach around. And then without thinking about your breath, you just hold and pull. So you're facing the tree, you're sitting on the ground, you hold and pull, and you pull for as long as you like. But when I say hold, I mean hold with your hands. Don't decide to let go. Don't decide not to let go. Just let it happen naturally. You pull for as long as you like and see what happens to your breathing. But this exercise is called tatak, which is a nice short one, right? A nice short name, tatak. Yeah. Just see what happens to your breathing. It doesn't have to be a tree. It's just nice if it's a tree. Yeah. It can be a rock or anything like that, but it's nice if it's a tree. You can do it on something artificial. You could probably do it on a fence post if you want, but it's not quite.
It won't be as interesting.
You can still learn through it, though, because the whole point is you're still AMSCA. You're still looking at the changes that are going on within your own body. But you use that AMSCA flavor to observe the changes that are going on inside your... that are going on inside your body, yeah? So you could use a fence post. But anyway, the point is that it's lightweight observation. Mm. Even that word observation is wrong, isn't it? You know, it's just like...
It's hard. The English language is hard. Because every time I say a word, I'm like, Damon's going to pick me up on this. He's gonna shout at me for this.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard. And it is... It's just like you're looking without thinking at something, an animal doing stuff that you didn't know the animal existed. You didn't know the animal did that stuff. You didn't know the thing. You'd never seen it on YouTube. You had no idea the thing existed in the world. It's just like you're looking at that and you're looking at yourself in the same way and what's going on within yourself. So, you know,
you're using it as like a mirror then.
You're using it sort of a mirror that extends throughout your body. It's kind of weird analogy for a mirror, but you know, you keep that pull on. It's something that, you know, sitting on the ground pulling against a tree, it's something you don't do a lot. So again, you're a bit torsultine, you're using an unfamiliar exercise, tatak, to help you do that. There's a similar kind of thing, satelkin duchlan. Sorry, mate, this just the Mongol words are all, as you know by now. Sometimes saikan satel, you know. The blood reaches the heart. So imagine you're doing the same thing. The blood reaches the heart. When it reaches the heart, what you can do when you're in that position is you can fire the activity of the body in a smooth outward wave. If you want to think of that in scientific terms, is you're firing the muscular axons. The axons being the nerve cells, you know, it comes down, the nerve impulses come down the spine, and then they branch out or all through the body, through the muscles of the body. And those, when those axons fire, the muscles contract. So we're in this position, the tatak position, we're pulling, and then maybe we relax and do it, or maybe we do it on the pull again, torsultine, any way you want, or maybe during the transition from the pull to not pulling, or from not pulling to pulling. Again, when you don't pull, you might want to run your hands back around to the front of the tree and place your hands on it. Maybe sometimes I place my forehead against the back of my hands against the tree, and then when I separate them, I come back and pull again, something like that, various variations on that. And then when the spirit takes you, you know, from the lungs of the heart, nothing, Yeah, from the lungs to the heart, nothing. So that means when you breathe in, the blood is actually transferring from the lungs, the oxygen is going from the lungs to the heart. But then from there, when the blood reaches the heart, and again, you have to know what's going on here. You have to feel that with your chelicity. You fire the if you like, in scientific terms, the muscular axons in a smooth outward wave on the out-breath. And this could be the point when you're running your hands forwards over the tree. You know, this could be that point. Or when you're pulling them back around the tree and placing your forehead against your hands. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, the senses of it kind of rippling along. The axons fire at the same rate that blood proceeds from the heart to the extremities. That does, it's reasonably slow. Depends how fast your heart's going. It's reasonably slow, but it's not really, really slow. Yeah. But I'm not going to tell you how long it takes. I actually know how long it takes because I'm a biologist, aren't I? I actually know how long on average that takes, the round trip from the heart to the extremities. But I'm not going to say that because I want you to get the sense of that. I want you to feel that for yourself. If I tell you how long it takes, you'll start imagining it, and we don't want to go there. So either when say your forehead's against your hands and the hands are against the tree, I start the breath, and the breathe in, that you can feel the blood from that breathe in. It reaches the heart and then it fires outwards towards the extremities of the body. You fire the muscular axons in a smooth outward wave from the core of the body outwards towards the extremities, towards the fingertips and toes, if you like, in a smooth wave as that oxygenated blood runs along inside your arteries and out to those extremities, to the capillaries in your fingertips, if you like. And as you do that, either on the move my hands around to the far side of the tree just before I do tatach, or after tatach, I could also do it as I pull them back and place them flat and then maybe put my forehead. I'm not saying you have to put your forehead against the back of your hands, but when you start doing it, if you start doing that, you'll find why I'm saying that happens. I discovered that myself. I wasn't really told to do it. I just found that happens. And then I found out that other people are doing a similar sort of thing, you know. There are things like that. You know, often you'll hear me say, as the spirit takes you. If you feel something coming out of that process, as long as you're not imagining it, then, you know, that's definitely something you want to play with. When you breathe in, you want to try have the sense of keeping your breathing tube narrow for this one. This is Setlin Duhlan or Saikhan Setel, two different names, both Mongol. You want to keep your breathing tube the breathing through the mouth is not too quick. You want to use the tongue and the throat to warm the incoming air. A great time to do this is in really, really cold weather. So, you know, you can imagine I've done this sitting in the snow. This is not allergy, though. You will not find this unpleasant. You won't find it bad. Yeah. So you could be wearing warm clothes. You don't have to. If you want to do Aragyo, then sure, take all your clothes off and do it. You know, but it's not necessary. Yeah. So if you do it in really cold weather, you practice. Okay, you can take your top off if you want. Yeah, you take your top off if you want. Because even that is not Aragyo, and you'll find out why when you do it. You find out why. I'm not sure whether I should explain why or not, because it might not help. But if you do this right, this is a clean Duhlan. If you do this right, you will find that you don't feel cold. If you get that wave right, the wave of axon firing, the wave of the muscle firing, smooth outward wave, with that wave of the blood moving outwards from the heart towards the extremities, if you warm the incoming air with your tongue and throat as it goes down into your lungs, then your fingers will stay warm if you're doing it right. And you remember what I said, shamanism is testable. And if your fingers go cold, you know, just stop, try again on another occasion. Do not continue. Do not imagine that your fingers are warm when they're not, you know. Good way, easy way to do that, just put every now and again, put your fingers to the side of your face, put them on your tongue, put them on the side of your neck just to see how cold they are, if they're warm, yeah? And this particular exercise, I don't mean just Tatach, I mean Satrin Dorlanen. And as a representatives, as Torshaltin-based representatives of Amskar, and all the variations on these things, they tend to lead to a feeling, a warm feeling, a generally warm feeling. I just don't mean temperature. I also mean, if you're doing this in a place, if you're doing this kind of thing in a place, Setrlin Dulan can also be done when you're not doing Tachach. I hope everybody by now has got the idea that it doesn't have to be done just doing the Tatach technique. You can do it in, well, you do any technique you want. You know, this one's particularly good for it.
Yeah.
It develops a feeling of warmth, but not just a physical warmth. It's a kind of warmth of the spirit between you and the environment, between you and the tree, between you and the ground. That sort of rootedness in the ground that we talked about in some of the other Amskar techniques. That rootedness in the ground has a warmth to it. And it's in some ways, I mean, again, I don't want to sound like the woo-woo stuff, but it gives rise to a feeling of a kind of love for the environment. I don't know another way in English to describe it, but that feeling of warmth, love, it's not like a romantic love. It's a nature love. And it's not like, oh, I love nature, I love birds, and I want to protect them and train myself to a tree. It's not that kind of thing. It's something very synergistic with nature. It's like you're part of nature, but also nature is almost like you're in nature's womb, like you're almost like cocooned by nature. And that feeling is actually the meaning of the name of that technique, Setrlin Dulan. That's the name of that technique. So when we've said that you know, I haven't got a word in English, I sure do have a word in Mongol, Setrlin Dulan. Yeah. So yes. So to recap, yes, in a way you're right, Joe. If you get the flavor of practicing the Amskar techniques that we've taught you, or Amskar techniques that other people may teach you, or you may learn from somewhere else, then if you get that flavor, just like you did when you get the flavor of Chalisti when you were working on level one, hopefully you haven't stopped working on level one, because you'll find yourself going back to the drawing board if you do, then if you got that feeling and you allow your Torshaltin to come to the fore, you will yourself, now we've given you quite a few examples, you will yourself start coming up with other examples and other examples and other examples, and it will go on and on and on. And, you know, you can, in a way, create your own toolbox. Take these things as the, you know, rather than your own painting palette, yeah? That's actually a better analogy for stage three, the spirit dance, but for stage two, you can start to come up with your own painting palette, and maybe something you'll come up with will be really useful to you. But just remember, it's not about impressing your friends, this stuff. In fact, I'm pretty sure if you're doing Tatach, it probably isn't going to impress your friends.
No, they'll run away.
Yes. But it's doing what it's intended to do. Is if it's teaching you about the relationship between your breathing and your circulation and your physical body and your spirit, if it's teaching you in a way of a mirror, you know, like a mirror, like your it's teaching you in a way that you're not, you know, imagining this stuff, making it up. If there's very little there, then whatever little is there is still of huge value. Yeah. You don't have to embellish it. You just allow it to come. And in a way, that idea of taking the flavor of the particular stage you're working on, you know, taking the flavor of Amskar and then learning how to switch it on and then allowing Torshaltin to come to the fore and then expanding your understanding of nature out through that, or the way that things that nature is teaching you out through that. You can see that as a parallel to what we did with Chalisti. We give you a bunch of exercises for Chalisti, but then hopefully you get the flavor of it and you can turn it on through its own flavor. Well, guess what? the same for all of the other stages of shamanism, exactly the same thing. And what we said is, we do turn back to Chalisti. You notice now we've done a few AMSCAR exercises. We've been on AMSCAR techniques. We're starting to talk an awful lot about Torshaltin, yeah, which is part of Chalisti. And so it will go as we progress through the various layers of shamanism.
Which is why you could probably say that shamanism has infinite techniques then, surely.
I think I've said that a few times, haven't I?
Yeah, yeah. That
it has infinite techniques, absolutely. And in a way, the techniques are, as we've said, whatever techniques it does have, every single one of those infinity techniques is surface level. What we're after is something that's behind there, what it's pointing at, you know?
Yeah.
The technique is the guidepost in many ways, yeah?
Yeah. So once we're comfortable-ish with stage two, once we have a flavor of it, once we have a feeling for it, we then switch on Torshaltin to a greater extent than what we would have done normally.
I wouldn't say switch Torshaltin on. I'd say allow it to grow. Yeah, allow it to come to the fore.
Yeah, and then we use that. Torshaltin to take our stage two in whatever we feel like, in any kind of everyday situation. How does it affect our breath?
How does it affect our breath? Absolutely. How does it affect our breath? And then how does the fact that it affects our breath affect our circulation, our heart rate? How does that affect the energy changes that go on within the body? As a result of that, yeah, absolutely. The breath is the way in. But it's not the purpose, it's the way in.
So you've given some solid examples towards the end of the episode, but at the beginning of the episode you were talking about simply just opening a door or walking around a corner or getting up off the floor. Simple everyday things.
Exactly. And, you know, to me, climbing a tree is a simple everyday thing because I've done it so much, yes.
Okay.
And then, so out of that, what you'll find is now you start, you know, as we've gone through AMSCAR, we've got into some movement here, haven't we? We started talking about some movement, yeah? Mm. So this is where we come to Tam or Bobuchig. This is what you'll feel quite naturally. You'll feel those little shoots of the spirit dance, the start of spirit dance. You'll feel that coming through. And in a way, you know, when we said the seven stages of becoming a shaman, each stage points to the next, you know? Chalisti kind of points to breath because Chalisti gives you that way of seeing the world that's very immediate, that's very, you know, Burak Shikhat Harate. And it the first part of the world, the most obvious part of the world, is the part of the world that's closest to you. That's your body, right? That's your breath and your body and your heart rate and all that kind of stuff. So kind of Chalisti points to AMSCAR. And then as you get more familiar with AMSCAR, AMSCAR starts to point you towards Bobuchig, there are many names for spirit dance, even in Mongol. So, you know, I use various ones like Tam Bobuchig. You'll find me hearing them, using them interchangeably. But basically, in our terms, spirit dance, it points you into that and it starts to become that. And so, you know, a few times I've mentioned that I do believe that this stuff is possible for somebody who is honest enough, someone who's open and honest and is able to set themselves to the side, is able to not have judgment, not have imagination. It's possible for somebody to figure all of this out for themselves, although it would be very, very hard work and it would take an exceptional person to do that side self, stepping to the side your whole self, which is a thing that when you have a guide, a teacher, your guide kind of does a lot of that for you. You know, we talked about breaking up the cap of pips and skins on the wine and forcing it down into your juice. But if you can do that yourself, you know, these seven stages, they're not just like seven unrelated different things, that each one grows into the next one quite naturally. It's not, and that's the same when we're onto Guruch. It's no different coming out of spirit dance or animal spirit dance, which is a more advanced form of spirit dance. It points into Guruch quite naturally, very, very strongly. For me, I found that. And then Guruch, you know, once you get the familiar for Guruch, then Modoch starts coming out of that. And then, you know, Modok, it's not so much that the Ailath, the journey comes out of that. It's like the Ailath, the journey is one of the things that can obviously come out of that when you really get a handle on what Modok's all about. It's not the only thing that can, but it's one of the things that can, one of the useful things that can come out of that. And then the Ailath, you get a lot of practice of doing Ailal, then try and stop the Nechdel coming out. If you do, you know, if you got good at the spirit journey and you do it a lot through your life, you do it for years and years and years, you couldn't stop Nechdel coming out of that. It may not be the full understanding, the full integration of the Nechdel, and you may not be able to do it. You know, Nechdel is a very powerful thing, but you may not be able to do everything with it that somebody had actually been kind of trained in to the point of Nechdel and what its purpose is and what it's about. But it would be impossible for you to get good at Eichlal without some Nechdel being there in yourself, in your behaviour.
Could you give a very, very brief, I know it's hard, just for the interest of the listeners, what is the Nechdel?
So the Nechdel is the purpose of shamanism. It's what it's all about. If you want to think a baseline description of the Nechdel, there's nothing harder in this world to describe on the baseline than the Nechdel. But it's something that I have thought about a lot. So the Nechdel is when the shaman has completely dissolved and is entirely part of nature in the shamanistic state. And when the shamanistic state is resolved, if the shamanistic state is resolved, because some of the great shamans never come out of that, the Nechdel never reduces. They never come out of the shamanistic. They go in there and they don't come out. Nakayama Miki, who's someone who we talked about, stayed in that state for 50 years. Yeah. Mm. So at least that's the historical records indicate that. The Nechdel is what hangs with you from the Eichlal, from the journey. It's what hangs with you. It's like the natural human desire or the natural human structures, human constructed structures have not only gone, to a certain extent they start going when you learn Chalisti. They've not only gone, but they have ceased, their importance has ceased, it's gone away. And it's been replaced by something else. It's been replaced by nature. And so the Nechdel is the shamanism that hangs with you when you're not doing shamanism. That's probably a good definition of it. It's the shamanism that hangs with you when you're not doing shamanism.
Through your deep practice of shamanism over the many years
through your loss of what was there. You know, what you find when you come in Modok, Goruch, Modok, Ailath, this is about loss. It's not loss of anything that I want to hang on to, frankly. It's loss of stuff that I don't want to hang on to. But it's a loss. It's not a gaining. It's a loss because what you find is nature is there already. I think we've said this, you know, nature is there already, but it needs uncovering. And there's nothing... There's nothing you need to take into you in order to achieve the Nechdel. There's an awful lot that you need to take out of you in order to achieve the Nechdel. And that's more than just the miasma.
Fantastic. Okay, then. Should we call it a day there? Is that if there's nothing else you want to...
No, that'll do for another one, Joe.
Okay, well, thanks very much for listening, guys. Head over to wovenenergy.com/start-here for your exclusive Get Started episode. There's plenty of information in that about where to start. Thanks a lot, guys, and we'll see you all next week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.